So, you know, the web page or whatever is just something that you guys do for fun. Do you have a real job?
Well, that is our job.
Oh.
We don't technically get money for the hours we put in, but it is our job.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
How come you don't have any money? I thought you had a paper route.
Well, I'm taking a sabbatical to focus on my pottery.
Oh. How's that working out?
Not good, Meg. Not good.
This is a hard sort of case sort of subject to really investigate because you can't really, you know.
Yeah.
It seems completely spontaneous and random, and you know, you can really only go after, it's similar to the UFO phenomenon, you can really only follow up on from witnesses tell you almost.
Yeah, and there are a lot of good cases. I mean, the Presque Isle landing case up in Erie, you know, you got photographs of the landing pods in the ground. I mean, there's an Air Force colonel there looking at them. There's some kind of substance on the ground that didn't soak into the sand. We've had Bigfoot, you know, abduction cases. No cattle or human mutilation cases that we're aware of.
Well, wasn't the Todd Sees case in Pennsylvania?
Well, the Todd Sees case was in Pennsylvania, but we don't know what to classify it as.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
You know, there are witnesses, and again, we went after them, and there were supposedly like three fishermen in the, on the other side of that ridge is a river. And there were three guys out in the river fishing, and they swore that they saw something above the high-tension power lines and something being pulled into a light, into the whatever it was, and off it went.
Yeah.
Can we find the guys? No. Does anybody else know them? No.
Yeah,
you know, that was a, you know, Carbondale's kind of like Kexburg. You know, I have looked at the Kexburg case a number of times, and yeah, I know that, you know, with the Freedom of Information Act and all that, they said, the government said, yeah, it was a Russian satellite, this, that, and the other thing. Uncanny, though, about that case is that the Kexburg object is almost a spitting image of the Nazi Bell.
Oh, yeah. I'm well aware of that, yeah.
And when I talked to the chief investigator of that case and brought it up to him, he said, nah, it's nonsense. And I'm thinking, well, this thing was tracked coming in from Canada. After the war, we had a bunch of people up in Canada, Nazis and American scientists, trying to develop the anti-gravity. You know, they came up with the Avro car, which was a real flop, got up to 35 miles an hour and about 4 feet off the ground. But when you look at a picture of the Kexburg bell with the writings around it, and you look at a picture of Das Glock, the German bell, the Nazi bell,
yeah,
they're identical.
Well, what's the writings around the Kexburg bell? Are they hieroglyphics like we've always sort of heard, or are they just sort of...
Hieroglyphics, just like on the Nazi bell.
Oh, I didn't know there were hieroglyphics on the Nazi bell.
There's a picture on our website.
Okay, I'll check that out, yeah. Interesting.
Go to the photo gallery, go to UFOs.
So you've been looking at this for a long time, obviously, aside from the 10-year break there where you sort of put it down, and I commend you for that. Believe me, I wish I could walk away at times. You know, what do you have sort of an end, you know, scenario on this? Do you have sort of like a final verdict, if you will? Obviously, it's always changing, and there's always permutations to it, but, you know what do you think's really going on,
end.
I guess? You know what
One
I mean?
One of the things that I have in my mind, and it's kind of coming to fruition, we have found a building. We're in negotiations right now about the building. I would like to have a real brick and mortar research center where people could come in and look at all the books that we have, all the videos we have, all the evidence we have. They could sit down at a computer. We'll put a couple, three computer banks in there. They can search the databases. They can ask questions. They can get answers, you know, but something where, people can come in. They're not going to email me. They're not going to call me on the phone. They can walk in.
Oh, they're still going to email you, Butch.
Oh, I know that. Yeah, I know. I think unless I would cut the wires and the cables coming to the house, I'll always have that. But
exactly, yeah.
Brick-and-mortar research center where people can, you know, they can say, hey, this is what I saw, and I can show them pictures and say, well, this is a hoax. Here's what we found.
Right.
Oh, this is a good case, and we're looking at it, or, you know, or get information from them. But it's – that's probably the end, not the end for me. I don't think it'll ever end for me until I pass on. But, you know, we have a large group of, and there's sightings of these all over the country recently, these orange orbs. And I have one of those on our website that was taken by a student up at Edinburgh, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, but I guess, Link, to bring it back around to what I was saying, though, do you have, like, a final opinion, I mean, not, like, a final goal? Like, do you have a final thought on what this all is? Or do you have a, you know, what's your current take on what really is going on here? I mean, you're talking about some serious stuff here with these human mutilations. I mean, this goes beyond...
Forgetting all, just using the Brazil case as a starting point, it absolutely took place. I mean, the autopsy report, all that has been certified. I mean, it's signed, sealed, and delivered. So if that happened one time, but we have all these other cases that could have happened or did happen, and nobody's talking, we at least have one case that we can say, yeah, it happened. So if it happened once, I'm sure it happened more than once.
Exactly. It only takes one white crow to show that all crows aren't black or something along those lines, right?
Yeah, and then you have the cases coming out of England now, the mummified bodies with holes in them, missing organs. You have the disappearances of people just keeps going up. You know, it doesn't stop. It's still the same. You know, the average is a little higher than it was, but it's still there. I mean, how do you get rid of, like, 13 million people in that 17 years? What the hell do you do with 13 million bodies?
Well, not necessarily all of them die, though, right? I mean, some of them...
Yeah, we don't know. We don't know. Are they taken away?
Prostitution, that kind of thing. I mean, you have to account for that kind of thing, right? Don't people, like, disappear into that sort of realm and then, sex slavery and killers that get away with it, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that probably accounts for a good percentage of those 30,000 per year that go missing, but... I mean, talking about the time portals, I mean, this might, you know, just to throw this out there, I mean, obviously some of these very well may be human mutilations, but there could be weird cases where people somehow slip into another dimension and we never see them again.
That was brought up a number of times in discussions that I have with my guys. And there was another one where, you know, the guy's saying about missing people, he said, well, you know, maybe they're being taken for food.
Exactly.
Maybe they're a food product.
Maybe they're given the option to leave and not come back. I mean, what if you – some people that would take that option.
Always reminds me of that Rod Serling show where the guy's getting up into the saucer and he's got the paper in his hand. These people are screaming, no, it's the menu.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, so we don't really know. So, but it sounds like you're of the opinion that these are aliens doing this stuff or whatever you want to call them. They don't necessarily have to come from another planet. They come from another dimension. We don't even get into that whole origin debate. But what you're saying is there's some nefarious – alternative intelligence that is behind the cattle mutilations, the human mutilations, the abductions, and they're not good people.
Look, if the government was going to do cattle mutilations, they'd have a ranch. Why would they? You know, some of these cattle are found with every bone in their body broken, dropped from great height, where they actually impact and indent the ground.
Right. You're not. You don't give any credence to the idea that this whole thing's black ops, the cattle mutilation, perhaps even the human mutilation.
No, they've got stuff underground. If they can keep, you know, like the U-2 underground for all those years, and it was flying back in the late 50s, and we only find out about it in the 70s, I'm sure they could have a cattle ranch underground somewhere that we'd never find out about.
Right.
So I really don't buy the government part of that. I buy the cover-up, the government not wanting it out in the open, but, you know, then it takes you back to the deals, where possible deals made with the aliens way back when, where, you know, we'll give you so many thousand people to experiment on, and you just give us some technology, and if you look at the time frame, a lot of technology changed from the 50s to today.
Right.
And that was about the time that all this stuff was supposed to take place, allegedly. You know, that's the only part about this that just bothers me. You can't really get that Brazil case in your hands in this country.
What do you mean?
And other countries really, you know, if they're missing 500,000 people in one afternoon, they could care less. You know, they don't have to feed them.
Right, right, right. Well, it's very strange. Now, what do you mean you can't get that case in your hands in America? I thought you had it translated and everything. What do you mean, like a similar case?
It's not like a new case. You know, or like the case in Bliss, Idaho.
Yeah,
it's not existent.
Well, like they just don't, you can't get any info on it.
Nope, not existent. Just somebody just wandered off and died.
Right, right. Goes back to what I was saying earlier about how the police—they're not going to really, you know, it's not even an option for them to say that it was a human mutilation. So they're not even going to go there. It's like what we were saying about the firemen and the spontaneous human combustion. It's just it's not. So it makes it even more difficult for you to actually get your hands on any of these cases. It's going to take some kind of, you know, inside whistleblower in a, you know, in a forensics department or something like that to say, hey, hold on a minute, here's like five cases that you should look at.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, Larry Arnold, you know, the work he's done is phenomenal. The guy has done a phenomenal job.
Oh, yeah, he's outstanding. His work is awesome.
He's gone back so far. I've read the book twice because, you know, there's some stuff in there I just couldn't believe. And then, you know, I read it, and I started asking people that are involved in the firefighting end of it, and they just kind of, like, laughed it off like it was a joke. And I'm going, like, well, wait a minute. If you're laughing it off, it's telling me you have no explanation.
Right.
You know, at least tell me that, okay, it couldn't happen because...
Right, right. All the explanations for that are just... We talked two-plus hours with Larry. I could have talked to him for, like, seven. It was just so amazing. And
yeah, you know, like...
The material's bizarre.
They set the I guess the one... Well, I saw his one film where, you know, they set the pig on fire.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So you set a pig on fire. It's called a barbecue.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, you find somebody that they're sitting in a chair, and from their chest, from their mid-torso up, they're gone. But from down, from mid, they're fine, and there's no damage to the room. The chair isn't even damaged. But they're gone. They're just a pile of ash. Explain that one to me. You know, but ufology has turned, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure. You have the groups that were set up years ago, and I'm not just saying MUFON. Oh, there was a lot of groups that were set up.
Absolutely. Most of them are long gone by now, but yeah.
Yeah, a lot of them are long gone. You have... a younger group coming up. They're more educated. They're internet savvy. They can research, which is a big thing. They know how to use the digital camera. They know how to use a meter. They can use the electronics that are out there. And that's, you know, just like the Bigfoot people now, that, you know, they're putting out all these trail cameras. And there was one operation where they put out 500, I think, trail cameras. And, they got like an arm throwing a stick at the camera. They have another one where there's a blur in the camera, like somebody's pulling the camera off, and the camera was destroyed. So are these creatures, humanoids, whatever they are, smart enough to, you know, they sense that camera, or there's something about that camera, or they know it doesn't belong there, and they destroy it, or they rip it off, or they walk around the back of it instead of the front of it? Possible. Absolutely. You know, people say, well, I want to, you'll have to shoot one. And first thing I always say to them is, well, wait a minute. Let's get something straight here. If it turns out that it's not an ape and it is humanoid and you shoot it, that's called murder.
I suppose. I'm sort of in the gray area on the Bigfoot kill debate. I feel like, I feel like it would be inhumane to kill it. But at the same time, as a, you know, someone who lusts for an answer to the Bigfoot mystery, and I choose that word specifically, you know, in a way I feel like in the long run it might be worth it. To be honest with you, but my mind changes on that, you know, over time. I'm not sold one way or the other. As I said, it's in my gray area.
And I've, you know, although I've heard a couple cases where Bigfoot's caused some damage or death, nobody's ever proven those cases. A lot of them were from the 1800s by lonely guys sitting out in the woods, you know, with their dog hunting grizzly or something.
Yeah.
So the sightings, I mean, I look at some of these photographs and I go, like, my God, the guy's wearing sneakers in a Bigfoot suit.
Now,
they're saying that this is a real shot of the Bigfoot. You know, somebody needs to tell him to take the yellow laces out of his sneakers and we wouldn't notice those so quick.
Yeah, exactly.
Or at least wear green sneakers.
Now, is it obviously I'm sure you're well aware of this whole cattle mutilation thing. Obviously, you're the guy behind the human mutilation story. Is this thing, obviously, it seems like, as I said earlier, so it's like burst, like in the 70s or whatever, or the 80s and stuff, or at least to the degree that it's not like an epidemic like you hear nowadays. Is this cattle mutilation stuff still going on, or is it pretty much sort of petering out, or has petered out?
Oh, no, absolutely going on. The last one I read was in July of this year in Colorado.
I mean, July last year. It's July now. It's June now, so it can't be.
I'm sorry, July of last year.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was a horse that was mutilated.
So it's still going on.
There were two reports in. One was in North Dakota, and another one was in Wyoming, of cattle mutilation.
But it can't be going on to the same degree because it was like a pandemic at the time. It was like something.
I don't think it's
the same
degree.
They were rounding up posses and stuff to try and figure out.
And I'll tell you this too: a lot of farmers, and this was this came from a report that I read that was given to me by a guy that does nothing but that, and he said that you know this farmer didn't even report this. He said because if he reports it, his insurance company won't pay for that animal.
Exactly. Yeah, it'd probably just be more trouble than it's worth at this point for these guys.
Well, these cattle are worth like $4,000 or $5,000 a piece.
Yeah.
And this guy was really specific about it. He says, yeah, this guy had two mutilated within 6 months within 50 yards of his house, between the barn and the house. Now, the animals were actually in the barn. And when he wakes up one morning, he finds the one outside. And then a few months later, he finds another one outside done in the same way. And he didn't get paid for the first one. Well, he sure was going to get paid for that second one, no doubt about it. He didn't say a word. He buried that sucker so quick, it was unbelievable.
Strange. That's when you get the cow sleeping in the living room.
Yeah, right. But so are people reporting it? Maybe some not. Human mutilation is absolutely taboo. It's just...
Yeah, well, what's been the reaction from the other UFO researchers in the UFO research community? Because they're already sort of territorial and often seriously wed to their own worldview of what this phenomenon is. So anything that really sort of challenges that, they'll, you know, quickly dismiss.
You just hit it right on the head. They all have their own little thing. Even in the larger groups, they've broken down into smaller groups. And they're all on the verge of the discovery of a lifetime. So they're, you know, they write their books and they do what they got to do. And they're all trying to follow the yellow brick road that's going to take them to the bank. don't get me wrong. And I mean this sincerely. There are a great amount of good investigators out there. Some of these guys that are writing these books put their heart and soul into it. And they really work hard to do it. And then you have the other ones that, you know, they throw a book together on a weekend and tell you that, you know, they got this, that, and the other thing. I find that when you have like ARIRA and us, and there's a few other groups out in the Midwest, there's a couple down south, where it's tight-knit. There are people that have worked with each other for a long time. They all came from other groups, either disenchanted or just wanting to, you know, be part of a new group. They're the ones that are really digging in and doing the research. Like, yeah, I'm based in Pennsylvania and my group is based here in Pennsylvania, but we've been to New York. We've been to, Florida. We've been to North Carolina twice, New York, wherever the cases take us. And I don't think the smaller groups are apt to do that. They're more apt to just pull what information they can off the internet and publish it. I want to see it. I want to talk to the people. You know, we've looked at everything from plane crashes from way back where it was possible a strike by a UFO. The only problem is, you know, record keeping wasn't like it is today. So pulling records from the FAA is like pulling teeth out of a wildcat in a phone booth.
Yeah.
There are. The groups are whittling down. You can see it more and more all the time. I'll go look up a group that I might have looked at last year or something like that. They're not there anymore. So whether they've petered out or, you know, they've moved on to another group or started something else, I have no idea.
They're ghost hunting now.
Yeah. there's a lot of research groups out there that are still researching. And, you know, when a guy shows up with a flashlight and a pen and pencil, I'm thinking, you know, this guy is not a ufologist. I know what it takes to get our mobile unit, you know, what it took to get that together. It took us over a year to get everything in it, radios and you know, evidence gathering equipment and everything you can think of, from trauma kits to climbing and rappelling ropes and kits. And there's a boat. We have a boat. We're just the only thing we don't have is a helicopter, and I keep saying that's it. That's where I draw the line.
Yeah, yeah.
But like I said, there a lot of younger people are getting involved now. They're asking more questions. They're not afraid to use the Freedom of Information Act, where 10 years ago, if you would have used that when it came out, you have the IRS banging on your door at 3 in the morning wanting to check your books and this, that, and the other thing. Well, yeah. You know, the government can hide a lot of stuff, and I think a lot of the larger groups have been infiltrated a long, long time ago.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's been borne out, over the years as we've seen what happened to some of these groups.
Yeah, they got destroyed from the inside. Small groups like ourselves and Araya, just to mention the two, they're small. We got people just about in, many states, not all, but many. So we cover pretty much the whole East Coast. We do not publish our members at all. We publish the advisory board. I don't publish anything on advisory board or members. Not going to, because some of these guys and girls belong to other groups, and I don't want that garbage, coming back to my group.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that kind of – actually, that's a good segue here, because I have a difficult question I have to ask you here, Butch, but if I don't, I would be doing a disservice to listeners. Obviously here we've talked for like almost 90 minutes here. This isn't a gotcha interview. I'm not here to set you up or anything like that. But there was some pretty serious accusations made against you at the end of last year. And when I heard about them as I was doing the research into this interview, it was like Butch Witchkowski disappeared from the internet as a result of these accusations. But I'm like, what are these people talking about? I'm going to be talking to him later on tonight. So clearly he hasn't disappeared. But these are some pretty serious accusations. I'm not going to get into them. People can do their own research, just like I did, to find out what I'm talking about. But I've heard that you have no public response yet, so I wanted to ask you, what is your take on all this?
Well, it happened when I left the group and started the other group, and all of a sudden, we were getting we went from zero hits on the internet to 45 or 50,000. And then all of a sudden I was on coast to coast, and I was here and I was there, and I was called to speak at the Lawrence, Kansas thing with all these other top-notch speakers, and all of a sudden this garbage started coming out, and I said, well, we'll let them go. I sent all the proof out to the people in Lawrence so they knew that what was going on, and they basically looked at everything and said, if the guy wasn't what he was supposed to be, what's this picture of? Who's this? What do these papers mean? You mean this stuff was all forged? And that was the end of it. Didn't hear anymore. It kind of went away. Well, of course, I'm not going to let it lay. Haven't heard anything up until, about a month ago. One of a researcher called me and said, I just got a call from so-and-so, and he said this and that and the other thing. And he said, I told him he was lying. And he said, no, 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 it's all the truth. He said, no, he said, you're lying. And he hung up on me. And we've gotten all the emails that these people were sending around. Everything's been turned over to an attorney. They have their own investigators. Mm-hmm. So we're just going to handle it that way. And my site keeps growing. The cases keep growing. I have not received one evil email from anybody. No bad phone calls, no threats, no nothing like that. Matter of fact, a lot of the people that I guess they thought were on their side really aren't on their side, and they give me all the information I need. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think so.
Badmouth me, and then those people turn around and send me the emails, and I turn around and send them to the attorney.
Yeah. Well, not to put words in your mouth, but would you say that these accusations then are, categorically false? I mean, are they, or is there something we need to know?
Nope, caca.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go, folks. There's your response from Butch Witkowski to these accusations. I mean, I don't want to go there, really, but at the same time,
sure,
you have to, because if I don't, then I'm going to get a whole bunch of crap from people that's like, you had this guy on, and here's all this crap, and I'm going to, so hey, let's get it out in the open. Let's address this.
But I
didn't want to do it at the start of the interview because, in my opinion, that would be disrespectful to your research. So
I guess one of the biggest things that really was upsetting was it's just like one investigator who is, a matter of fact, a judge, called me right after it happened, and he said, now here's what you need to do, and gave me all the information I needed, because I was basically stunned. I took my internet down for a day because I was afraid the site was going to get, nailed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was back up the next day, and I thought, why? What brought this on? Never did anything to those guys, never said anything bad about them, just any other thing. And, he said, basically, I know who, what, where, when, and why. And he said, trust me, these folks ain't got the kind of friends they think they got. He said, matter of fact, he said, you're going to start getting some information shortly. And I did. Within a week, I had gotten about 9 emails that were sent between the individuals about me, not to me.
Mm-hmm.
And to a couple radio stations I was on and stuff. And, you know, they sent them to me too. And, you know, I guess the biggest thing was that when it came right, the very first thing was they said I was never a police officer.
Yeah.
And I had sent my graduation from the State Police Academy paperwork out to the people in Lawrence. I sent pictures, stories about me in the newspaper. And the thing that bothers me the most is the Internet isn't really what it's cracked up to be. I see, you know, they have these sites where, you know, investigate your neighbor, find out everything you need to know. Well, that's not really true.
Yeah.
You can do that kind of stuff, but it's just like one of my investigators in Araya was a FBI agent, was a one of the originators of Homeland Security, private pilot, this and the other thing, and he had a friend of his do a background search on him, right?
Yeah.
Nothing came up that he was ever in the FBI or that he was ever a member of Homeland Security or he ever went to flight school or, and he gave them all the information and it didn't come up. You know why? Because information is only kept for 10 years and only bits and pieces are kept. And after 5 years after that, nothing's kept. So when you hear somebody say, yeah, I tried to get this job and they said I didn't graduate from high school. We had that happen at the company I worked for all the time where, you know, we'd hire people and HR would call us and say, well, the guy didn't graduate from high school. We can't do that, you know. And then the guy says, what do you mean I didn't graduate from high school? He brings his yearbook in, and there he is. Well, they don't keep records anymore. You know, it's put on the Internet. It's put in safes. It's put in microfiche, whatever, however they save it anymore.
Yeah.
And basically, when they started looking at me trying to dig up stuff, they only found what they thought they found. They didn't find everything. They
right.
just found little bits and pieces, and they put concocted this whole ball game together. So I just decided, you know what, I'm not going to let it rest. So I got the best attorneys I could get, and they laughed. I mean, the guy looked at the one email, and he said, this guy's dead. He said, he's done. He says, just how much do you want?
Nice. That's the kind of thing you want to hear from the lawyer.
Well, not only that, when I said, well, how much do I need to give you? And he said, you don't need to give me nothing. He said, I'm doing this for 30%. I went, oh, okay.
Nice.
So
why we haven't seen any sort of official response from you to this whole thing? Because, I mean, it's been going on for like 6 months. That's been this whole story.
Oh, yeah, it started in January. Matter of fact, I think it was New Year's Eve.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the lawyer said, he said, we'll do your talking.
Okay.
He said, whatever emails you get or phone calls you get, he said, take down the number, he said, or copy the email, send it to us right away, and he said, we'll take it from there. And all they're doing is really just building up this case. And I've only seen these guys 3 times, and the last time I was in, this guy had like a stack of email there, like 40 pages. And he says, here's your 3 culprits. And he just started, you know, he's seen that. Now I said, this is a 4th one we just brought in, and we found some on him. And I'm like, wow.
So this is like an intentional smear campaign, I guess you could say.
Yeah. I guess I was just getting a little too well-known, a little too popular.
Do you think the human mutilation aspect had anything to do with it, or was it just personality conflict?
No, I think it's that and personality. I didn't agree with when I left. There were some disagreements that I had with the individuals and the way things were going, the way things were being carried out. And I just felt as though, you know, if that's what they've got to do to advance themselves, it doesn't really help their research any. I mean, I haven't stopped researching, not 1 minute. When I was out there in Lawrence, Kansas, you know, I was out there with like the creme de la creme of ufology. I mean,
yeah, that was a fantastic lineup.
Jesse Marcel Jr. And I mean, these people I met and, you know, got to talk to them and, you know, they all asked the same questions. And the one guy who will remain nameless at this point, but who is probably one of the biggest names in ufology, walked up to me and he said, you know what? He said, they're trying to spear one of our own. He said, that doesn't sit well with me. And I just looked at him and I was honored to be called one of our own.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
He said, you know, I read that stuff, and he said, you know, that's caca. He said, everything that we've done together, that we've talked about and we've shared, he said, has always been on the up and up. He said, I don't know you to ever do anything to the contrary. And he says, when I read that stuff, he said, I was just so furious. He said, I wanted to call him right away, but instead he says, I'm one of the people that sent some of those emails to you. But some of them came, they didn't. Now they know who they're from. That's very easy to track.
Yeah.
Because they hired a company out of Omaha. That's all they do. For lawyers. They do it for lawyers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And they got everything. They got, oh my God. And I'm thinking, you know, to have that come from those guys, I mean, I was just choked. I felt, you know, and every one of them was the same way. Every one of the 14 speakers. And I thought to myself, you know, I just will go about what I'm doing. Just pay it no mind, pay it no attention. That's what the attorneys are doing. That's their job. Like I said, I really never, ever, not one till this day, ever got a bad email or a derogatory statement or anything, or a phone call, nothing. No death threats, no threats against the family or anything like that. I mean,
I wouldn't expect anything.
We're still on the radio shows. We're still going. Last week we were at a fundraising event for a paranormal group that does one every year for an animal group and children's group. And we were invited this year, and we had the truck up there, and we set up everything, and we had a good time. We were there for 10 hours and just met a lot of great people and got a lot of great stories.
Hey, yeah, man, you're on BOA Audio. It doesn't get much bigger than this, so I wouldn't worry about it hurting it's disappointing. And you know, it's the difficult part of it is, Butch, you know, I've talked to you here for a while, and I don't know, I really don't know you, and I don't know these other people. I look forward to seeing where this lawsuit goes, because I feel like, you know, I'd like this to be cleared up, because it's stunning accusations, I guess you could say, because, you know, they're saying you fabricated your whole background. That sounds, how could that, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, I don't know whose uniform I was wearing, but fit very well. And till this day, on the Oz UFO group, they still have that picture posted.
Yeah, I saw that. So
posted. Now they had like four of them up there. One of me in a car, another one at a crime scene, and a bunch of newspaper clippings. And they took those down, but they left that one up. And the guy said that's going to stay there till the end of time.
Nice.
Yeah. So,
is there any timetable on this lawsuit, or is this something that's
out
of your hands?
No, I think it's really up to them. I know there's three different investigators working on the case. I don't even know who they are. I've never met them. And plus this outfit they got that's doing the computer work. I know they're out of Omaha. So I think it's Omaha. But just like the one attorney said, he said, look, there's three of those. He said, look, he said, just the fact that, he said, forget everything else. Just put everything else aside. The fact that they start out their thing with saying you were never a police officer in the state of Pennsylvania.
Well, you know, if we're going to get into the real nitty gritty of it here, I thought the part that, you know, where they say you're a multiple convicted felon in Pennsylvania for fraud is a bit, you know, I mean, that's,
so,
you know, that would make me call my attorney.
So, you know, he said, you know, be that as it may, he said that on its own, just that, he said that is outright. That's an outright lie. He said, you can't do that. I don't know. I don't even think about it anymore, because if you want to make a name for yourself, like if you want to be the top radio guy, I mean, you're not going to call the next top radio guy and start putting out garbage on him. That may or may not even be true.
Absolutely not. That's not how I roll.
No. And you know, for somebody that does roll that way, you got to think, what did they gain?
Yeah.
What did they gain? They gained absolutely nothing. I mean, I think we're up over almost 90,000 hits now. I'm still out doing my thing. I'm still getting cases. I'm in Richard Dolan's book, AD. I started a book on the forensics of investigation, UFO investigations and sightings. That'll probably be out in about maybe in... No, I'm going to lie to you. I had a date, but, you know, I thought, you know, about a year, but probably looks like it's going to be out maybe the end of next year.
Yeah. Well, I run into the same problem. Every time I put a publication date on things, it always gets pushed up by half at least. So
well, yeah.
That's the way it is.
The first time I've ever done it, so, you know, I'm trying to keep all my ducks in a row that I'm getting the right stuff from the right people, and I'm getting the permission to do it and all that stuff. And I have a fellow that I've contracted with that when I put a chapter together, he goes over it and makes sure that I've got everything, you know, the way it's supposed to be and
yeah.
got all the correct publication notices and all that stuff and the okays to do this, that, and whatever I have to do. So that's pretty exciting doing that. We've still got a lot of these old cases that we're digging into. The ones that are in green are ones that are finished.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw that.
And we'll probably have another one up there shortly. The Thunderbird one, I think, is next.
Nice.
Because everybody's describing to us is basically, it sounds like it's a condor. And if they get caught, and it's happened many times where they've captured condors in New York City.
Oh, yeah.
So they get into the upper atmosphere or the trade, what do you call them?
Sort of like the air trade winds, if you will, right?
Yeah, the thermal whatever it is, and they get caught in that, and they can't get out of it, and they just stay in it, and they just wind up in New York. So I think that's what people are seeing.
Interesting.
When we go back in history on Thunderbirds, you know, they started with the Indians, you know, back before white men were even in this country. There's writings and history of Thunderbirds. And there's also, we found those writings in 1650, like a manuscript, but done in like wood planks,
mm-hmm.
symbols that traveled from the tribes in the Midwest to the East Coast, where the tribes moved. As time went on, they moved closer to more inhabitable areas. And they've talked of Bigfoot. They've talked of a large, hairy animal roaming the woods, killing deer. And
oh, yeah, the Native American lore is fascinating stuff.
Yeah, so I'm just going on as I'm going.
Nice.
I enjoy kind of what I'm doing.
You beat me to the punch on what's next for you. So have you thought about putting out anything on this human mutilation stuff? I mean, even an article, you know, in one
I
of the big magazines or even, you know, some kind
yeah,
of treatment.
Yeah, I think I'm going to put that everything out I have on the Brazil case and a couple of the other ones and just put them on the website. And
you got to, because this is, I mean, I looked into your stuff and I couldn't really find much, you know, of the documentation. I think if you really put it out there, I think it'll generate more.
Yeah,
leads,
I think so, too.
You know?
And one thing I just wanted to say to you, you know, they don't know that they're being sued.
They do now. They do now, Butch. So, you know, we'll see where it goes from here. But I wish you luck in the case, provided, of course, that you're, you know, telling me the truth. But so far, everything seems like it's on the up and up. So I got no dog in this fight, Butch. So don't worry about it.
Well, that's
you know,
a lot of people say. They go, like, they just shake their head, you know, and they go, like, wow. I said, when I read it, I couldn't believe it. I'm going like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was pretty stunned when I saw it, but at the same time, it's like, this is ufology for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know? This is, we eat our own in this field.
And it's just so amazing. I don't know. It's just amazing. I don't know why or what it was, but it was just phenomenal. And then and the poor guys out in the group that put on this Oz thing and the UFO thing in Lawrence, Kansas, they are an investigative group. I mean, that's what they do for a living.
Yeah.
And they went into it and they said, man, you need to get an attorney. Yeah, I know.
All right. Well, yeah, we don't want to give this too much more publicity as it is, so... You know, I appreciate that you've been so open about all this and you know, willing to discuss it and just didn't no comment me on it because, like I said, everywhere I've been reading about this, and it's not in very many places, so you don't, you know, it's not like this is some huge scandal or anything, you know, but everywhere I've read it's like Bruce Bukowski disappeared, and it's like, no, he hasn't. I'm talking to him at 8 o'clock tonight, so so clearly, you know,
yeah.
It's a case of the internet being like 6 months behind or something.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. You know, I always give everybody face value when I meet them. And if they turn, they turn. There's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah.
But if I was meant to not be doing this, it would have been done with. Too many people out there in ufology just said, you know, Butch, do it. Just keep going. Just do it.
Yeah.
Ignore this. Do it. Let somebody else handle this. You know, you're on good tracks with a lot of stuff. And even the people that I just met out there that knew a little bit about it, just one guy just laughed. He said, oh, yeah. He said, I was convicted of murder 5 years ago. I looked at him. I said, what? He says, oh, yeah. He says, another group started up, and he was with, I think it was MUFON. I think it was a KUFOS. And he left them and started working on a case. I guess he started with them, and that upset him. And next thing you know, I don't know, on Facebook or someplace like that, they put on there he was a convicted murderer or manslaughter or something stupid like that. And he had to get an attorney to get, you know, to actually put a cease and desist order.
It's a wonder people even do this because don't they know that there's laws about this sort of thing?
But I mean, I'm pretty sure that's why I'm not hearing anything is because, you know, everything stopped when those pictures were published in Lawrence, Kansas.
Yeah.
That's when everything stopped. The day they went in, that's when everything stopped. And the few emails that we got after that were just kind of, you know, meant nothing, but it still showed that there was a absolute connection between this individual with that individual or whatever.
Yeah.
But the day the pictures were published and I sent in my DD-214s and stuff like that, it was done. Finished.
Interesting. So, all right.
Well, wherever they want to take it, they can take it, but we're ready to fight them now.
Nice. Well, we'll leave it at that. And you kind of already teased the what you have coming up for you. What's any speaking engagements you want to plug here for the end of summer or the fall or anything you got up your sleeve?
Geez, I don't know the name of the it's a show out of New York that I'll be on, a paranormal show.
Okay.
I'll be on that the 10th of July.
All right. Well, we'll probably won't have the episode out by then, so it's a push.
And Margie K, I did that one already. But, the radio shows keep coming, and the contacts keep coming, and we still keep dragging and pushing and carrying on and fighting for this human mutilation stuff to find out as much as we can. And I'll tell you, like I told all the other radio guys, you know, if I get anything that's, you know, a hit or, you know, something that's really bumped this stuff up, you guys will be the first to know. I got all your emails and I save them all. So, if something happens, if it's a hit, you know, and we find another mutilation case or we found out of another mutilation case that's provable with, you know, autopsy and photographs and all that stuff.
Yeah.
You guys will be the first to know.
Absolutely, yeah. Keep in touch and let us know what's going on here. And folks who may have information should contact you through the website, paufosearch.com. That's pretty simple, all one word, paufosearch.com. And it's all over Banal of America, so folks should easily be able to find it. And, you know, if you have any information on these human mutilations, get in touch with Butch. And, you know, I'm sure I'm willing to bet 100% that Butch will keep your name anonymous. He's not going to, you know, be like, well, Billy Bob in you know, Tucson told me about this case. So, you know, if you have some information, get it to him because this seems like something that's lurking under the surface that, as you said, is taboo. A lot of people don't want to talk about it, but maybe we need to start talking about it because it's some pretty creepy stuff.
Yeah, it is. Creeps me out.
Yeah, it is creepy because, you know, you hear these stories about UFOs and everything, and with the exception of these stories about pilot encounters where the pilots disappear and stuff, you very rarely hear about sort of like death and UFOs together. But
yeah.
This really may very well be the case. So it's worth investigating. It's imperative that we investigate it because we're all trying to get to the bottom of whatever the agenda is behind this phenomenon. And the
time portals. That's another thing that's really got me bugged.
Absolutely, yeah. The time portals is tremendous. I want to know more about that as you investigate it. And like I said, though, very prickly, difficult subject to investigate because you can't
Yeah,
everything, you camp out like, where the time portal was. You can camp out there for 60 years, and there won't be another time portal, Butch. So it's,
and
you know,
it's like everything else. It's always after the fact.
Exactly. That's the difficulty of the paranormal, it seems.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
But that we keep plugging away because, you know, one of these days we'll get there as the fact is happening or before the fact, and that's what we're all hoping for, right?
Yes, sir.
And on that note, you know, we'll close the book here on this conversation. I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, Butch, sharing this troubling but really enlightening information about human mutilations. You know, I wish you the best of luck getting more of these cases and getting more to the bottom of this, and I hope, you know, as you get more prominent here, because you really, from what I understand, you've only been really sort of like talking about this for the last few years. So the more this gets out there and the more people hear about it, hopefully the more information we can conjure up or find and uncover about this very strange phenomenon. But definitely please keep us in mind if you have any breaks or any amazing news comes your way. And I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. I wish you the best of luck with everything in the future.
And I thank you, and we will do that.
That does it for this installment of BOA Audio Season 6. Big, big thanks to Butch Witkowski for coming on the show, giving us so much time, and for being so candid in his answers. You can find out more from Butch at the website, www.paufosearch.com, paufosearch.com. Check it out. Moving right along now, it's time for BOA Audio listener feedback. And we've got a bunch of emails here, lengthy ones, so let's just dive right in. The first one comes from Diane and Dave in Malmesbury, Wiltshire, UK. And it's written by Diane, speaking for herself and her husband, Dave. Here is what Diane has to say. Can't quite remember how I found you on the net, but I'm rather glad that I have. I've listened to other podcasts, but I find yours the most balanced, interesting, and varied. I'm currently working my way through the archives. Wow, thank you so much for making them available. I'm now working my way through Season 3. I think my husband used to cringe a bit when I first started listening to esoteric podcasts, but even he has to admit he finds your shows fascinating. I guess you could say you've grown on us. You are clearly well-read in all things of an esoteric nature, and your interviews are professional. Not polished, but definitely professional. If we wanted polished, we'd listen to BBC. Our house is divided on the yeah. I like it, he doesn't, but you know, he is a Brit, and I'm an expat American. I still need to start reading the blogs, but with working full-time away from home, it's a matter of not enough time. Promise to work on getting more than half the story in the future. We both love that you recognize your staff at the end of each show. It reminds us that this is a team effort. Yes, we do listen to the very end each time. And finally, I love how you start each show with, "Hello, my friends," as I rather feel like you are a friend. I'm so delighted to listen to you advert-free, and in a small attempt to continue to keep it this way, I've clicked the PayPal button. I've also bought a couple of t-shirts from your BOA store as well, one for me and one for the better half. We wish you much success in all you do. If you're ever in the Malmesbury area, drop in for a spot of tea and cake. We're relatively close to Avebury, Stonehenge, Woodhenge, etc. Wishing you all the best, Diane and Dave, in Malmesbury, Wiltshire, UK. Thank you for writing in, Diane, and by extension, Dave. You guys are awesome. Really love the international listeners. It is totally thrilling to know that Diane and Dave are out there in the UK listening to BOA Audio right now and listening all the way to the end of the program. Got to give them extra points for that as well. Hope you are enjoying the dig into the BOA Audio archive. I think we're up to like 175 episodes at this point with no plans on slowing down. One line here in your email did stand out. That is that the house is divided on the yeah. That's a conversation that we had at the end of the program, probably back in Season 3, since that's where Diane's left off so far. And that really sort of revolved around my style of encouraging the guest with their answers by just sort of saying yeah, and sort of giving them a little bit of a push as they're talking. I don't like to interrupt the guests, but I like to let them know I'm here, I'm listening, and when they're done, I'm going to have additional questions. I haven't really noticed it in a long time, so maybe my style's changed over the years. I still use some verbal crutches that I'm totally aware of them and certainly cringe when I hear them as I'm listening to an episode back. But that's just the way we do the show. That's just the way I do my interviews. People seem to like it. I enjoy doing them that way. I appreciate that you call us professional but not polished. That's the one thing I don't want to be totally here on the program, and that is totally polished. I mean, the style of taping, the insanely random posting times, we're anything but polished here at BOA Audio. I prefer to be raw, and the listeners, I think, have come to accept and really enjoy the rawness of this program. Gotta also thank you in a huge way, Diane and Dave, for picking up the t-shirts and for clicking the PayPal button and making a donation. I don't want to turn this into a long plug for donations, so just let me say thank you, thank you, thank you. You guys are awesome. And your donations via the PayPal button and the t-shirts will go a long way to helping keep the lights on here at BOAHQ. And if I'm ever fortunate enough to be in the Malmesbury area again, I will definitely stop by. In my younger days, I did make a trip out to the UK, spent some time in London, and had the opportunity to go and visit Stonehenge. That was back in the year 2000. I've heard it's changed quite a bit in the last 11 years, and I would absolutely love to get back over to the UK. But I can barely keep the lights on at BOAHQ. I mean, who are we kidding here? I couldn't even fund a trip to the zoo. So right now, it remains a dream to get back over across the pond and explore the esoteric side of the UK. Hopefully someday in the future that can happen, and don't be surprised, Diane and Dave, if you hear me knocking on your door in Malmesbury looking for a place to crash for the weekend. Next email comes from Alex. No hometown listed. Here's what he has to say. I've listened to a bunch of your podcasts. They're good for listening to when I'm doing some kind of work that doesn't require concentration. Anyway, I'm writing this email to ask you, how much do you believe the people that you have on your show? Judging by the number of UFO people you have on your show, I'm guessing that's where your primary interest lies. What about the rest of it? You had on one woman who found all manner of textual and numerical significance to everything in the Bible and other religious sources. You had a guest on that believed that all Sasquatches were telepathic. I think that's your show. Maybe it was Radio Mysterioso. I think you had people on who think that FEMA or the UN wants to put Americans in concentration camps, but I'm not certain. Signed, Alex. I'm not certain about a lot of that. I'm sure we've had people on that think that FEMA or the UN wants to put Americans in concentration camps. I'm willing to bet on that. Regarding Sasquatches being telepathic, actually, now that I'm thinking about that, that could be Joe Fex that you're talking about, Alex. So that's a possibility as well. And I'm sure you're talking about Dr. Joy Pugh with regards to the textual and numerical significance to everything in the Bible. Now, with regards to how much I believe the people that I have on the show, we've had dozens of guests. Maybe it's close to 100 now at this point. I'm not positive. I'd have to go back and count. Some people I believe quite a bit. Others, to be quite honest, I don't believe at all. It's not my job, really, to act as the gatekeeper to the BOA Audio listening audience. I'm sure there are many shows out there where the hosts will only have guests on that they believe, or will only have guests on that espouse theories that they believe in. I'm not one of those hosts, and this is not that kind of show. Our program really aims to bring the message to people out there. We'll interview just about anyone in the realm of the esoteric who has a theory or has a line of research that they want to discuss, and I like to leave it up to the audience to determine what they believe and what they don't believe. Once I start sticking my nose in the believability and the veracity of the guests, that's when things are going to go haywire in a big way. Now, that sounds kind of like a circumspect answer. So if I was going to get more specific, I would say that my beliefs are almost entirely fluid at this point. When I first got into this, I probably believed in the base theory behind all paranormal. You know, Bigfoot is a lost animal. UFOs are aliens coming from another planet. in the last 6, 7, 8 years since I've been in the paranormal community, my opinion has just really just broadened. It's become murkier than ever before. I've talked to so many different people with so many different theories that I've come to the conclusion that you really can't pin almost any of this down. So it's hard for me to really say what I believe in anymore because my belief is constantly changing. I felt like that's kind of a long, rambling answer, but I'm hoping that somewhere in there, Alex got some idea of where I stand on some of these things. Hopefully it wasn't too vague or philosophical. Nonetheless, thank you for writing in, Alex. Final email is another international listener. It comes from John in China. Kind of a meanie here. Here's what John has to say. The shows you've done from September 1st, 2011 onward suck. Absolutely no show content. When will the drought end? John in China. Why do you gotta be so mean, John? First of all, we haven't even put out an episode in the entire month of September, so clearly they suck because they do not exist. Maybe that's what he's trying to say. Maybe this is some kind of, like, riddle. Yes, you're right. Absolutely no show content. I explained it at the beginning of the show. I had to step away from Banal of America for the last few weeks because I had to work. Because I have to have a job. Because doing Banal of America does not pay my bills. I would love to not work and concentrate on BOA full-time. But if I did that, I'd be running this entire operation out of the backseat of my car, which is where I would be living. So I apologize, John, in China, for the drought. I apologize to all the listeners out there who are unhappy that it's taken us so long to get another episode out to you. But I gotta work. I gotta pay the bills. I gotta do what I gotta do to keep Banal of America running. And if that means walking away from the website for 3 weeks, that's what it's gonna take. Those are the sacrifices the listeners are gonna have to make if they want this entire operation to keep running. I could be like other shows and go premium. I could be like other hosts and send emails out begging for money constantly. I'm not going to do that. At the end of the day, we all have to make sacrifices. I have to work to make my money. You guys got to wait a little bit longer to hear BOA audio. I know it sucks, but hey man, we're going through a global depression. Maybe you don't feel that, John, because you're in China and you're taking over the world. But those of us in America are hurting, man, and we got a lot of bills to pay. And those of us here in Banal of America, same thing goes for us. So the drought is over, as you can hear, John, and stay tuned. Obviously, we're going to try and get the episodes out a lot faster than they have come to you in September. That's a given. And if I could put a pin on it, I'm hoping to do them every 10 days or so till we wrap up the season. On that note, we wrap up BOA Audio Listener Feedback. Thanks to all the international listeners, John in China, Diane and Dave in Malmesbury, Wiltshire, UK, and Alex from Parts Unknown. If you'd like to be a part of future installments of BOA Audio Listener Feedback, here's how you can do it. You can write to boaaudio@hotmail.com or go to banalofamerica.com, B-I-N-N-A-L-L of America.com, and click the contact button. And the final method is, of course, to join up at the official BOA forum, theusofe.com, theusofe.com. It's BOA's paranormal playground. Lots of discussion going on there about the esoteric as well as pop culture. So hop on over to the forum or send us an email. We'd love to hear your correspondence regarding the program, and it just may find its way into BOA Audio Listener Feedback. I would be remiss if I did not also mention that I'm part of Facebook and Twitter. So just punch in Banal, B-I-N-N-A-L-L, and you'll find me on those social networks. Befriend me, follow me, poke me, it's all good, and it would be awesome to have you a part of our online circle of friends. Up next, let's thank the outstanding and esteemed BOA staff. Leslie, Chiron, Regan Lee, Joe V, Tina Senna, Rochelle Hawks, Richard Thomas, Marla Pena, Bruce Pretty, Tony Morrill, our contributing cartoonist Andy Carolan, and our webmaster Jeremy Boston. Much like BOA Audio, the offerings at Banal of America have been a bit dry here in September. Big thanks to Leslie and Regan Lee and Tony Morrill for contributing some columns here this month. I'm going to try and rally the troops and get some new stuff at you in the month of October. Do not fret, my friends. And once again, let me point out, if you're only listening to BOA audio and you're not reading the columns at Banal of America, then you're only getting half the story. BOA, make it a part of your everyday search for esoteric news and opinion. Now comes the time in the program where I take my hat off and pass it around to the BOA audio listeners and ask you to make a donation to the Banal of America franchise. There are two ways in which you can help out BOA via donations. First, you go to banalofamerica.com, B-I-N-N-A-L-L of America.com, and click the PayPal button. They'll walk you through the process. It is safe and secure, my friends. But if you don't trust the internet and you want to donate via snail mail, you can do that by sending your donation to Tim Banal, P.O. Box 232, Pinehurst, Mass. 01866, and you spell Pinehurst, P-I-N-E-H-U-R-S-T. So altogether it is Tim Banal, P.O. Box 232, Pinehurst, Mass. 01866, and the address is prominently displayed at BOA right under the PayPal button. We say it week after week, but I want to stress it once again, my friends. No donation is too small, and all donations go towards Banal of America and BOA Audio to help keep the website and the audio series up and running, freely available, and commercial free for all of our great readers and listeners the world over. Next time on BOA Audio, we have got an episode that is sure to generate some controversy from the listeners and from the world at large. Our guest is filmmaker, author, and activist Pearl Jr. She is the woman behind the film Alive. Is Michael Jackson really dead? On June 25th, 2009, the king of pop, Michael Jackson, died. Or did he? Pearl Jr. is going to join BOA Audio to make the case that Michael Jackson faked his death. She'll outline the clues that suggest MJ is really still alive and explain how and why such an elaborate plan would and could develop. I know you're sitting there right now going, wow, a Michael Jackson death hoax episode? Yes, we're going there next week on the program, my friends. I saw this film on Netflix. Probably had the same reaction that many of you out there are having right now. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Who is behind all this? Then I watched the film and was like, wow, Pearl Jr. is behind all this, and I've got to get her on BOA Audio to share this theory with the BOA Audio listeners. We taped the episode a couple of days ago. Pearl Jr. is dynamic. She's fascinating and funny and really has a lot to say about this Michael Jackson death hoax. So if you're sitting there saying, no way, man, I'm not down with that, please reconsider. Give this episode a chance because I think you're really going to find it very, very interesting. Pearl Jr., creator of Alive, is Michael Jackson really dead? On the next BOA Audio. And on that note, we say goodbye for one more week here on the program. Big, big thanks once again to Butch Witkowski. And of course, big, big thanks to the folks who wrote in for BOA Audio listener feedback, Diane and Dave, Alex and John. And what would be the end of another edition of BOA Audio without me profusely thanking all you folks out there, the hardcore BOA Audio listeners, the folks who stick with us through the month-long droughts, through the crazy episodes, through the interminable delays between programs. You guys are the best. You keep supporting us. You keep plugging away. And I really, really appreciate your support. You are the fuel that drives the BOA mothership. Without you, we would simply not exist. Thank you for making BOA Audio a part of your esoteric audio playlist. Until next time, this is Tim Banal, signing off.